You know what didn't stop during the pandemic? Police violence around the U.S. Starting this week, there have been protests, a call to action against police violence here in Albuquerque, in the United States, and in many countries across the globe. Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. Today, we take a look into the events of protests here in Albuquerque as we had reporters on the ground detailing what they saw. One of the things they noticed was a real difference in how people are treated by the police after the protests. We also hear the story of an activist who has been taken into custody. This is a tense, uncomfortable time in the world, and it's not going back to what was called normal. We're skipping the news update today. For that, head to the online version of the show at KUNM.org. On Thursday night, after hours of demonstration by hundreds of people in cars and on foot in the International District in Albuquerque, four teens were pulled over by Albuquerque police. Two are black and two are Latino. Around 50 protesters objected to their treatment by police as they were being taken into custody, activists tell us. They say the boys were removed from the scene and they were released a couple of hours later with no charges. I spoke with one of these teens. My next guest is a young man. His name is Noah Tapia. He was at the Black Lives Matter protest on Thursday. I want to talk to him about what happened. Noah, thanks for being with me, my man.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So what brought you out to the protest on Thursday night?
I just want to support the movement just because I'm Hispanic, but I got some African-American people in my family. My niece is African-American. My brother-in-law is, and I got a lot of friends who are. So I just wanted to go and support the movement.
How many people went to the protest with you?
It was me, my little brother, who's 16, and his two friends who are African-American. One is 16 and one was 18.
So you guys are all just pretty young. What was the vibe of the night?
Yeah, everything was good. Like, we showed up around probably like 7 o'clock and everything was perfect. Around like 10 o'clock, that's like whenever things started to get a little bit amped up, but like it was nowhere near to what the protests were after that one. That one was peaceful, but we heard some gunshots and that's like when we wanted to get out of there.
Yeah.
And we were driving away, and that's whenever we got pulled over by the cops a block away from Wyoming and Central, where the protest was.
Well, tell me, what was it like when you got pulled over by the cops?
Yeah, as soon as they pulled me over, they immediately asked me to turn off the car and to throw the keys out the window. So that's what I did. I was just scared, you know? They were slamming my little brother and his friends on the ground. They had guns to their face. They did the same thing to me, and I did ask them why I was being arrested, and they wouldn't tell me at all.
I know this is hard for you. What did that feel like?
Yeah, it was really scary just because they were yelling at my little brother's friend, who was 16 as well, telling them that they were going to shoot him. You know, and just with everything going on, I was really scared for them just because they're people of color. And, you know, I was just really scared for them. I was scared for myself. And it was just something scary just having those guns pointed at your face for no reason.
So they were telling your little brother's friends that they were going to shoot them. This is while they're still down and the guns are pointed on them.
Yeah, they're telling them that they're going to shoot them. And they did tell my little brother to get up. And as soon as he got up, they body slammed him on the ground. And they gave him some bruises and stuff. And he did ask for medical attention later. And he's a minor, too. He's only 16. And mm-hmm. He's asking for medical attention later on. And they denied it.
About how many police officers were there?
There was probably around 10 police officers. And they looked like they were supposed to be in the army or something. They had big old guns. And yeah, I was just wondering why they needed all that just for a couple of teenagers.
Were you or anybody else, were you all put in cuffs?
Yeah, we were put in cuffs whenever all the protesters showed up and they came for our defense. That's when that happened. And as soon as they started showing up, that's when they pulled us off the ground and tried to act like nothing happened. My little brother and his friend, who are 16 years old, were asking to speak to the parents, and they said that they cannot do that. They weren't allowing them to.
How long did they hold you all?
Probably about 2-3 hours.
Mm-hmm. What was it like when you were released? Tell me that story.
Yeah, they just had me sitting there for hours, just not telling me at all what was going on. And out of nowhere, I saw my brother. He got released back to my dad, and then his friend got released back to his parents as well. Mm-hmm. But with me, when they came and released me out of nowhere, and then I asked them where my personal belongings was, and they gave me my phone back, and it was cracked really bad. And then I was like, so you guys just gonna leave me out here with nothing? No, yeah, that's what we gonna do. They drove me farther into the war zone and just left me in the middle of the war zone with nothing at all, like 2 a.m. You know, I begged them. I was like, can you at least call somebody, get me a ride or something? And oh, no, that's not a problem. And I asked where my little brother was, and oh, we don't know where he's at. And they just joked around about it, and they just thought it was funny. I just feel like, you know, they were just targeting us just because of our age, and they just looked at us as like vulnerable, you know, just our age, our race.
You're 18 years old. You got the rest of your life ahead of you. Talk to me about what type of impact do you think this is going to have on your life and what you do going forward.
I'm just going to feel like I can't call the cops for help, you know? Like, from what I saw, it seems like they don't want to help. I know there's some good cops out there, but the ones I saw that night, they weren't here to help me or help the community. From here on out, it's like, I just feel like I can't trust them when I should, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just going to make me cautious all the time around them.
Yeah.
When I shouldn't have to, just because, you know, I just feel like I'm profiled now, especially now they know my car.
Is there a message you want to give to the chief of the APD and Mayor Keller?
Yeah, you know, they didn't have to do all that just for a couple teenagers, you know. We were just a couple kids just trying to, you know, just go fight for our rights, you know. And they didn't have to do all that to us, you know. Mm-hmm. Put us in an armored vehicle, have these guns pointed to our face with guys in bulletproof vests and goggles on and helmets and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that night, I didn't feel like I was human. I even told them, you know, treat me like a human, you know. That's how I definitely felt that night.
Yeah, I bet. And thank you.
You're welcome. You know, thank you for calling and just letting me talk about this, too.
Mm-hmm. There seems to be a little bit of a difference between how the police operated in the initial Black Lives Matter protest on Thursday, as opposed to how they operated during the reopened protest that happened in April. What's up with that?
Yeah, so those are questions that we raised the day after the initial BLM protests, in which there'd been this really heavy police response. But, you know, the anti-shutdown protests, you know, included people who were armed with long rifles, at least six that we know of from Daily Lobo photographs, and there's not a police officer in sight.
Executive producer Marisa DeMarco, KUNM News Director Hannah Colton, and host and reporter Nash Jones participated in press conferences with Albuquerque Mayor Tim Keller, APD's Chief Mike Geiger, and Deputy Chief Harold Medina the day after the protest to ask questions about what happened, framing it in the context of race and response to protests. Here's Marisa.
The questions I asked Deputy Chief Harold Medina are hard to hear on the tape, partly because I'm wearing my COVID mask. Here's a summary. Demonstrators told us this morning that APD pulled out the armored car, the helicopter, two busloads of police and military tactical gear. Why use that level of force on a demonstration? And was the neighborhood that this took place in a consideration in how you decided to outfit police?
I think we need to really keep that in context, and we need to remember that we always are prepared for that kind of response. Riot officers, and one of the lessons learned from the Trump protest is we didn't have our officers outfitted in the proper gear, which allowed it to escalate to a point where our officers were endangered. Every single large protest, we have our officers prepared in that type of military gear, but we call it riot control gear, prepared to go out and respond if necessary and be safe. We also have to think of the safety of our officers. When that armored car was called in, it was called into a situation where we had officers being surrounded, dealing with individuals that we suspect could have fired several rounds in the area and could have done it several times during that time. So it isn't just one time that they fired rounds. We believe this vehicle fired rounds several times. So we are dealing with an armed subject, and we are dealing with it away from the crowd. So connecting the armored car to the crowd is kind of an unfair assessment, because that armored car was there to deal with the officers being surrounded at that vehicle that we take individuals into custody that were armed, that we're conducting a traffic stop. I hope that answers all your questions, but it wasn't handled any different because of this part of town than we do for any other mass gathering where we bring in resources.
I asked whether it turned out the people they took into custody were armed. Here's Medina.
We still don't have that information. That investigation is still being conducted, but we're still conducting that investigation to see if we're able to tie that vehicle. But early indications are we did have eyewitnesses who placed that vehicle as firing the shots, but we still need to confirm all that.
Then I asked if they had all the same gear ready to deploy for the anti-shutdown protests in Albuquerque in April that included at least six men armed with rifles.
No, we didn't have indications that that crowd was going to be as large as this crowd. We had indications as of yesterday that this crowd was going to approach 400 individuals. We never had that level or had that information that the protest here a couple weeks ago was going to reach that level.
I tried to ask about how when the tactical gear came out, there were only 50 or so protesters left from what we were hearing from demonstrators who were there. And the press conference was quickly ended. The International District is the neighborhood with the most African American people in it in New Mexico, according to the census. I also asked Mayor Tim Keller about police response to the demonstrators there about an hour later on Friday.
So the question was, you know, was the racial background of an area equated to our response? And of course not. Our response is always calibrated to the number of people and the amount of danger and threat that there is. And it doesn't matter who's involved.
For your New Mexico government, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
My next guest is Celinda Guerrero. She is a longtime organizer around police violence and incarceration in New Mexico, who helped organize the Black Lives Matter demonstration on Thursday. She's also organizing the mutual aid effort in Albuquerque during the pandemic. Her husband was taken into custody on Monday. The violation order says he failed to report to his parole officer by curfew, was combative with police officers, and failed to report his contact with police officers, which Celinda says happened the night of the protest. Here's Celinda explaining what happened after the teenagers were taken away from Central and Mesilla. She says Tapia's keys were left on top of the car.
So we had full intentions of finding the kids to make sure that they were okay. And so we took possession of the kids' property to protect it. When he got here, APD boxed him in and they stole the car back from us. My husband was in handcuffs in a different car. They drove off with him the other way to divert our attention, circled the block with him a few times, and then released him. Now we're Monday evening, and the next Black Lives Matter protest is about to engage. They've been following us and surveilling us all week. So we're on Gibson. They circle our vehicle, and they take Clifton to MDC. And they classify him STG Reds, which means segregation. It's like a lockdown. And then the booking clerk says, why are you here? There's nothing in the system. And he told her, I don't even know why I'm here. They called the arresting officers back, who then hand wrote a warrant in front of my husband for a curfew violation related to the night that the APD stole the car from us. My husband, when he came home from prison, he had a night job and he never had the curfew parameter in his conditions of parole. So now we've learned they have remanufactured a new warrant that now the allegation is that he was at a liquor store.
Do you feel like this is retaliation?
It's absolutely retaliation. He's had a positive interaction with his PO just on Wednesday when his PO told him, keep doing what you're doing fantastic, all positive reports. And then he starts organizing for Black Lives Matter on Thursday, and now all of a sudden, there's parole violations. Throughout this entire period, his PO hasn't had any contact with him to give him indications that he shouldn't have been doing any of these things.
Clifton's incarcerated at a time where COVID-19 is spreading through prisons and jails, and it's a huge concern. A nonviolent parole violation during a time when officials are saying the goal is to get nonviolent offenders out to prevent an outbreak. Have you gotten a chance to talk to him? Is he worried about getting the virus at all?
He is. There's an outbreak in Torrance County right now in the county pod where they have the misdemeanor holding. Prisoners just this week had to riot in there to get them to get medical attention to a man in the pod who hadn't eaten for days. And this is happening behind the walls, and he knows this, and he supports these efforts of Free 'Em All Friday. And so because of his work, he's being retaliated against. And this is what it looks like to be a political prisoner.
People probably don't understand the history of policing, particularly in the International District. Last summer, we had the State Police Metro Surge operation targeting the area. Then there was the Sheriff's Department's crackdown right after that. A couple years before, it was an ATF sting. What does this all feel like for residents?
All of these things happen every single day in our neighborhood. We have federal police right now active in the Southeast under relentless pursuit. They invested $71 million to attack the seven cities, and we're one of the seven cities. We have state police, Bernalillo County sheriffs, who don't even wear lapels or dash cams. We have APD, and they activate federal CIs against us, paid informants setting us up. when somebody gets pulled over three times, two times on the way to the grocery store and one time on the way back, we are extremely over-policed.
What do you want to see happen today or this week on these issues? What's most pressing?
If folks can keep making calls to the governor, she could release him this minute. She has the full authority because it's administrative. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham's phone number is 505-476-2200.
I want to thank you very much for coming on to the show, sharing your story.
Thanks, Khalil.
This is UNM Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. We're covering the way the virus and health measures are impacting people differently around the state. Along with the slow reopening of the state, we've shifted our broadcast to 3 days a week. Tune in Wednesday through Friday at 7 p.m. here on KUNM or find every episode anywhere you get your podcasts. Were you at the protests? What did you see? What happened? We want to hear about your concerns and your experiences. Call up our hotline, leave a message, and we'll interview you. Call 505-218-7084 or email yournmgov@gmail.com. I'm here with executive producer Marisa DeMarco, who covered a few of the Black Lives Matter protests this weekend in Albuquerque. Marisa, what did you see?
Yeah, so I've been at a couple of the protests this week, and I think what we're seeing is honestly like hundreds of people going out to demonstrate with signs, in some cases thousands of people just showing up for the Black Lives Matter movement and demonstrations here in Albuquerque. On Sunday night, the protest concluded, I think around like 10 or so, with some speeches on Civic Plaza. I don't know if like celebratory is the right word, but it was definitely a light mood. And, you know, there's like kids in the cars holding their signs out, like little kids. A couple hours later, like at midnight or 1 a.m., there was maybe 100 people left downtown. And a handful of those people were smashing windows and pulling furniture out of businesses. They lit a small bonfire. And I'm characterizing it as small just because I don't want people to think like there was buildings on fire. And then a really heavy police response. So two lines of riot police closing in on those folks from either side, firing rubber bullets, lobbing tear gas. And I was there for most of that. You know, the headlines the next day were like, thousands of people at BLM protests that erupts into violence. And I feel like that really just mischaracterizes what happens. It's almost like you're imagining at that point, like thousands of people growing ready to do a bunch of property damage. And that's just really, that's not what it was. And as these alarms are being raised by President Trump for deploying the military to quell these protests, you know, I think that narrative like plays into that, and it's just incorrect.
Here with me for more information on the latest protest is KUNM Newsroom Director Hannah Colton. Hannah, thanks for being with me today.
Sure, no problem.
So at the latest protest, KUNM reporters are seeing guys who are not police carrying rifles and wearing camo. Was it like that on Monday night?
Yeah, so I didn't see these guys until after the protest had just ended. I know other people did see them around the margins earlier. So the protest dispersed, people were walking back up Central, heading home. We started to hear on the police scanner about groups of armed men around the area. And almost immediately after I had heard that, I came upon this group of about nine guys, mostly white guys in, you know, fatigues, tactical gear, body armor, carrying what looked like assault style weapons.
Did they seem to freak out people, the protesters?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of these protesters are very well aware of, you know, a history of white vigilante violence against people of color in New Mexico, and immediately sort of smelled that something was really wrong with these guys. They're real serious looking, you know, just holding their weapons. And yeah, protesters were really upset, sort of demanding like, what are you doing here? The answer the men gave was, you know, we're here to protect people, or another version I've heard is we're here to protect property. And people, you know, clearly weren't buying it. They were like, well, if you're with us, then you would have been marching with us. You know, we don't need you here with your weapons. And clearly, yeah, people were just finding it really threatening.
And did they say that someone called them to protect their property in specific?
No, they didn't say they'd been called in by any business owners or anything. On their Facebook page later, because they said they were from the New Mexico Civil Guard, and I was looking through their Facebook page later, and there are calls out in like multiple counties for these members of this militia that's being formed to respond to, you know, what they're calling violent protests. And they're saying, we're going to get out there and protect businesses.
We saw on Facebook a UNM professor who said that these militia guys pulled the gun on him while he was trying to unlock his own office on Monday. Have you heard any more about that?
Yeah, I spoke with Nick Estes earlier today. He's involved with the Red Nation, organizing a Native American activist group. When he went with a group of people, including young folks like kids, teenagers, to back to the office, the Larry Kasus Freedom Center there, it's near Presbyterian Hospital. He said a couple of these guys confronted them and accused them of breaking in. And he said one of them had his hands sort of like down his pants, and he thought that he had like a handgun there. He said they were really afraid that he was about to pull that gun on them. And he and Nick just confronted him saying, look, this is our office. We're going in. He said that later on, after they were already inside the office for a while, seven of those guys posted up outside with their rifles. And he said it was clearly to intimidate this group of Native people. Another thing that Nick Estes told me is that he talked to one of the legal observers who was following the protest, the people in bright yellow, bright green hats. And the legal observer had talked to these militiamen and found out that they were there from out of state. And that's not something that I've confirmed, but that's what the legal observer said, is that these men were not from Bernalillo County, perhaps some of them not even from New Mexico.
Well, I want to thank you very much for your bravery and being out there, and thank you for your reporting. It's Hannah Colton, newsroom director here at KUNM News.
Of course. Thanks, Khalil.
Albuquerque Police Department spokesman Gilbert Gallegos is refusing to respond to most of KUNM's questions about even simple factual elements of these stories, and would not make anyone available to answer questions about police actions at these demonstrations. We also put in a request to speak with Mayor Tim Keller and never heard back. So I'm back with executive producer Marisa DeMarco. Have you asked anyone from APD about their procedures when it comes to situations like this, people with guns? I know it's an open carry state and you're illegally allowed to carry weapons should you have the permits and go through the paperwork. But did you talk to APD about their policies and how they approach this type of situation?
Yeah, so to hear from them about what they're, how they plan for these things, why their responses are different, those are all things that we still have questions about. But it does seem from what I know, there is a racial component to all of that that's unignorable during Black Lives Matter protests. We have people of color getting taken into custody, and we have mostly white men with big guns who are not police officers, you know, just walking around these protests and making people scared. Like, it definitely freaks demonstrators out to see these guys. And I just want to add that part of this episode and part of this conversation is around how we don't have a lot of data about race and ethnicity in New Mexico when it comes to the criminal justice system, which for years has stymied my own reporting on potentially biased policing in this state. So we have that conversation as part of the show tonight. Also, that there's a long history of really intense police actions in the International District in Albuquerque, which is, you know, kind of the small neighborhood region that has the most Black people in the state of New Mexico, according to census tract data. It also has a really, really high indigenous population. Migrants and refugees live over there. Even just looking at it in the last couple years, there's been a lot of really intense police actions from the ATF, APD, from state police, from Bernalillo County. That area is just one that is confronted all the time with a lot of police activity.
Months ago, Marisa was reporting on the lack of race and ethnicity data in New Mexico's criminal justice system. Things haven't changed policy-wise or legally since then. Here she is speaking with longtime criminal justice reporter Jeff Proctor.
So what is it that New Mexico's criminal justice system doesn't track And who doesn't track it?
Well, there are a ton of things that don't get tracked. But in this case, I think part of what we're talking about is the race and ethnicity of people who are caught up in the system at various levels. From informal contacts with law enforcement officers to traffic stops to actual arrests to who's in the 30 county jails around the state to who's in the state's prisons, we don't know data-wise the race and ethnicity of any of those people. So it leaves the state and all of its law enforcement agencies in a position where it simply can't answer questions about whether non-white people are being discriminated against.
How does this translate to a bigger picture? If the criminal justice system in New Mexico isn't tracking race and ethnicity data, what else don't we know?
There's a bottomless ocean of what we don't know. But in terms of like what the consequences are of this, it leaves policymakers like state legislators and governors and mayors and county commissioners in a place where they can't make evidence-based policies about how people are treated in jail, how people are treated in prison, where police resources are deployed, whether officers need additional training, sort of anti-bias type training. So it leaves policymakers in a terrible position.
What are some of the arguments about why collecting this information is complicated here?
There just aren't very many good arguments completely and totally against it, but it is complicated in New Mexico. There are all kinds of people in New Mexico who identify with more than one race or ethnicity, people who identify as Hispanic and Native American, for example. But in terms of arguments against government agencies and actors in the criminal justice system don't ask questions they don't want the answers to. So really the only reason to not track this stuff is because they don't want to see the actual answers from the data.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's often a moment when you're a criminal justice reporter in Albuquerque or in New Mexico where you have this idea that you're going to seek some of this information and then you realize that it doesn't exist, right? And it happens kind of early on.
It does. Yeah. We've both run into this for ever and ever. And, you know, it sort of popped in my mind during the last session. It's one of those things where you encounter it, it's a roadblock, you complain about it with your editors and other reporters, and then at some point the light bulb goes off and it's like, oh, actually this is a story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story that we don't do this, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you compare us to the rest of the country, I wanna see the data. I wanna see if the things that I've been reporting anecdotally, even on a large scale for years and years, bear out more broadly from a better look at who's in the jails and the prisons.
All week long, we're talking about race and police in the time of the pandemic. Join us tomorrow and Friday at 7 p.m. We want to hear your story. Do you have a story sharing your perspective about these tense times? Call up our hotline, leave a message, and we'll play your story on our air. Call 505-218-7084 or email yournmgov@gmail.com. And we're also on Facebook. Look for Your NMGov. You can find the full list of the resources we've talked about on past episodes and opportunities to donate or help online at bit.ly/YNMGHub. Hear us now on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays on KUNM's airwaves at 7 p.m. And as always, you can find the show on KUNM.org or subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the New Mexico Local News Fund, and KUNM listeners like you. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco. Theme music by Pope Yes Yes Y'all is produced by yours truly. Special thanks to Hannah Colton, Ty Bannerman, and Kaveh Movahead for helping with the editing. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, I'm Khalil A. Colonna. Thanks for listening.